Adam, if you could just tell me where you are right now.
I'm currently in Mukapa, which is President Arafat's compound here in Ramallah.
And how did you get into the compound? It's Friday, about 3 p.m. East Coast time here in Canada. And how did you get into the compound of in Ramallah, and how long have you been there?
About an hour ago, I entered with a doctor and some medical personnel. I volunteered to join the medical team in an ambulance to try and enter into the compound with another foreigner from Ireland. The two of us, we spoke to the soldiers in English and to negotiate with the soldiers to allow us to come into the compound to treat the wounded. We were forced to wait about 3 hours or so outside the compound before they would allow one of the ambulances that we came in inside the compound to treat some of the wounded here and to take two of them out to hospital.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Adam? What are you doing in Palestine right now?
I am a volunteer with the International Solidarity Movement, which is an organization that joins together Palestinians and foreigners, internationals as we say, to work together in solidarity with the Palestinian people in their struggle against resistance, struggle against occupation. And the way we work is to support Palestinian nonviolent movement. At times, especially when the Israelis have gone into cities, we as internationals try to perform another role, which is that of sort of like a human shield, by putting ourselves in homes that are, you know, targeted by the Israelis, or try to take to the streets to deliver food or humanitarian aid to people during times of occupation. That's why today I was in an ambulance riding around with Palestinian medics to treat wounded in the city, to bring food, to bring people to hospital if need be. And that's how, towards the end of the day, we tried to come into the president's compound because it had been hit very hard today. There was over, 25 or 30 people injured since this morning when the soldiers first opened fire and started hitting the compound. The doctor who we brought here had told us that there was no way, you know, earlier in the day the ambulances had tried to come in and the Israelis shot at them. And so he thought the only way that we would be able to get in is if we had foreigners in the ambulances speaking on the PA system to the soldiers in English to, you know, explain to them who we were, why we were foreigners here, and to get the ambulances in. And sure enough, after waiting for 3 hours, it worked.
I wonder if you could tell our listeners what it's like to be on the ground in Palestine interacting with Israeli soldiers.
The interaction with Israeli soldiers most of the time is usually at checkpoints, which choke all of the Palestinian cities. And usually that interaction is you as a Palestinian or as a foreigner trying to make your way across a checkpoint, showing your identification and trying to reason with a soldier to get him to allow you to go through the checkpoint, you know, to, you know, your land or to another city or to visit your family or to go to school, something like this. And usually the soldier responding with, you know, barking commands at you or, you know, shooting his gun in the air or sometimes targeting it at you. The Israeli soldiers tend to speak more with their military machines, their guns and their tanks and their APCs, their armored personnel carriers, than actually dialogue, you know, by speaking to you. When we were here tonight and we came and arrived, I spoke on the PA system of the ambulance to explain to the soldiers that this was a humanitarian mission to treat the wounded inside, that we stated from the outset that they could back to the ambulances, they could check everything, you know, that we had with us. They could check our person to make sure that we weren't, you know, like for their safety and security. And the only thing that we, you know, we were faced with two tanks, and they would rev their engines and point their guns at us and target us with their machine guns. And finally, they came out, lined us up, you know, frisked us, checked the ambulances, made us wait longer. When we kept trying to reason with them and find out what was going on, they were still sitting inside their machines, and we weren't getting any response. Finally, after waiting for a long time, a couple of soldiers did come out. Again, first us check the ambulances one more time, and then finally let us in.
What are the conditions of the people that you found there? You said there were about 30 people who were injured?
Yeah, some of them had been taken to a hospital earlier in the day. There had been an ambulance inside, and they were allowed out. When we came inside, there was one guy we treated who had a fractured leg. He'd been hit with a shot. Another one had been shot in the foot. There were some people, I believe, burned when there was a fire started here earlier today from a tank shell. The Israelis are just targeting the building and just constantly firing from all sides with their tanks. And, I mean, they just fire at will. There's absolutely no resistance coming from inside. There's no shooting from inside. People are crouched down on the floor, in the hallways, in their offices. You know, nobody's going near a window. There's no electricity here. You know, it's a bunker, but there's absolutely no opportunity to fight or to shoot or anything like that. Everybody's just sitting, sort of trying to wait it out.
And what has been the reasoning on the ground there in Ramallah, inside of the compound, for this attack? I know the U.S. and the Canadian press has indicated that this is in response to suicide bombing that had taken place earlier in the week during the Passover holiday. But what is the reason there on the ground in the compound?
I think it's just simply like part of, you know, people see it here as part of Sharon's larger overall policy, which, you know, is becoming clearer and clearer and clearer as the days go on. He started months and months ago by a small incursion only, you know, 70 or 80 meters into Area A in Gaza, and now he's trying to, you know, go after Arafat himself. You know, I think as this conflict has raged on, it's become more and more personal for Prime Minister Sharon. You often hear in both Palestinian and Israeli press about how this, you know, goes back to Beirut in 1982, and sure, you know, even earlier this week, Sharon said in one of the newspapers, the Israeli newspapers, that he regretted giving his assurances to the Americans that he wouldn't hurt Arafat personally. You know, I think that it's pretty clear that this is an overall policy by Prime Minister Sharon to get rid of President Arafat, to, you know, force Palestinian people to try to force them to their knees and to try and kill as many people as possible, to try and destroy as much as possible in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. And, you know, this is Sharon's war policy. He doesn't have a policy for peace, and he doesn't seem to be willing to do anything to try and bring peace about.
That might be, in fact, Sharon's initiative for the Palestinian people, but the Arab world itself determined just today, coming out of the peace summit that was initiated by Saudi Arabia, that Israel has to, in fact, pull back to the pre-1967 borders and seek a peaceful resolution with Palestine. Has that word circulated on the streets there in Ramallah?
Yeah, people are aware that this is what the Arab summit decided, and I think it was welcomed here by the Palestinians for the that this is the now united Arab statement that that Israel must withdraw to pre-67 lines. And this is a genuine offer of peace and normalization by the Arab world to the Israeli people. Unfortunately, the Israeli leader at the moment has no interest in delivering peace. I mean, to his people, what more do the Israeli people? What more have they wanted since the beginning of the founding of their state? But normal relations with their neighbors, peace in the region, and now it's being to them based on international law, UN resolutions, and signed agreements on the basis of land for peace that Israel has agreed to since the Madrid process began in 1991. But Sharon would rather go and fight, you know, his war, you know, that he takes personally, and also fight a war for the settlers who live in settlements inside the West Bank, inside the Gaza Strip, that are, you know, totally contrary to international law, to the UN resolutions, and to signed agreements. But he'd rather fight a war for these people than make peace for all of the Israeli people.
Well, Adam, I wonder if you can respond to what the United States government, in fact, your government, has said in response to the violence that has been experienced today in Ramallah. Colin Powell said today that he was, quote, gravely concerned, end quote, by the Israeli actions in Ramallah. And that followed him saying that, quote, the United States condemns the acts of Passover violence against Israelis and those responsible for them. So it seems that he has a larger condemnation for attacks against Israelis, but yet only has concern for actions that Israel takes in Palestine. Could you respond to that?
I mean, I think this is reflective generally of the bias of the United States government to in this conflict. I would be very happy if my government and Secretary Powell and President Bush would condemn all of the violence equally, all of the killing. There's not one life here that is worth more than another. There's not one life in this world that's worth more than another. I think it's interesting that at a time when the United States is trying to pursue a certain policy in Afghanistan and Iraq and around the world, that it's one of the only governments standing behind the aggression of the Israeli government and the Israeli army against the Palestinian people. I think all loss of life here, all violence here is regrettable. However, I think ultimately it has to go back to the source of the violence and the root cause of it, and that root cause is the occupation. As even Israeli Knesset members, including Yossi Sarid, have many times noted, the settlements themselves are violence and have been on the ground since 1967.
Adam, I wonder if you can also comment on the relationship between your participating in this international solidarity movement and your being active and riding around in ambulances in Ramallah today and an ending to the conflict.
Well, we at the international solidarity movement believe that there should be peace here for both people, for both the Israelis and for the Palestinians, but that peace must be achieved by ending the occupation. As an international who lives here in Ramallah and who lives among the Palestinian people and who works among them, I can tell you I know firsthand the evils of occupation. I know how it affects people. I know how it is destroying lives, how it is destroying homes, all of those kinds of things. And really, we call for peace. We call for an end of the conflict, but based on the signed agreements, the UN resolutions, international law, which means that the settlements and the occupation have to end.
What's your safety, your situation there now? I understand that you are the only international in the compound.
My safety, quite honestly, is in the hands of the Israelis. I'm perfectly safe with the people I'm here with. There's no threat to me whatsoever. I mean, the people here have welcomed me as one of them, and there's no threat whatsoever. The real threat is from the Israelis, and it's ultimately up to them. I mean, if they're going to continue shelling this building and you know, targeting it, then, you know, there will be people dying here.
On the line with us now is Heather from IMC Palestine. Heather, can you tell us about the Independent Media Center there in Palestine? Where are you, and can you tell us about some of the news that's been constantly updated today?
Sure. Luckily, because we are hosted by both or by the Alternative Information Center, we are able to have offices in both Bethlehem and in Jerusalem. And most of our work is done from Bethlehem, although we have volunteers from all over the West Bank. And we've been able to update news really rapidly because of having contacts on the ground in the international field and also local Palestinians in Ramallah and here in Bethlehem and in the refugee camps primarily.
How long has IMC Palestine been around?
The idea was put out quite some time ago, but work really started actually December 27th, I remember the day. And we've put up flyers in the refugee camps and at the universities, and we've pulled together a nice, strong group of people. We have a really committed group of about 10, total of about 20 volunteers that come in and out. And pretty soon we'll be moving the office to another youth center in Beit Sahur, because our office is located in Bethlehem, comes under fire whenever anything happens. So it's not the safest place to be.
Can you describe what it's been like running this media center and trying to get the word out about the impacts of that attack in Ramallah?
Definitely. I'm very lucky because I am a foreigner within the group. I'm actually the only foreign. Everybody else is Palestinian. And so, unfortunately, most of our other members right now are trying to situate themselves in places that are safe. As a foreigner, I feel that I can be in the office in a more of a in-front, more dangerous position on the phone getting press releases from Ramallah because they have no electricity there right now. So they can't connect to the internet, they can't send out press releases, but they do have phone lines, and the hotel that most of our international members are in has a generator. So I've been tied to the computer today updating our website, and we're also very lucky that we have some of our major technicians here because we've had some really serious hackers that did down our site for a little while today, but it's back up. So that's pretty much been my work. And earlier today, we had a lot of our Palestinian volunteers in who were translating the news stories from the Arabic TV. So that was a really good way for us to get news out immediately.
Why is it important to have something like an IMC Palestine right now as things seem to be escalating there in the Middle East?
Well, one of the great things about it is the open publishing format that it has, in that if you can get to a computer and an internet connection, you can put a story on this website immediately. And, you know, that's definitely, it has its good and its downsides in that we sometimes get strange stories and we do have a lot of really angry postings. But for the most part, we can get stuff up with an immediacy and with more of an honesty and a clarity that a lot of mainstream media can't. And we're not, you know, it's an independent media center. We're not tied to any kind of product support or a lot of the things that mainstream media are tied to. So we have a lot of opportunities that they don't, as well as this gives a chance for the refugees, you know, a lot of the refugees and the Palestinian people here to have a voice.
How does that work? How do refugees actually have a voice in IMC Palestine?
Most of our members actually come from the Haitian refugee camp, and because in a lot of the camps or around the camps there are internet cafes, they can get online and they can type in Arabic because our website will support both English and Arabic posting, and we try as much as possible to translate everything we put up. Again, that's sort of the double-edged sword about me being here, in that because I'm in a position to be able to be in the office and to be posting constantly, most everything going up right now is in English. We did have a lot of Arabic up earlier today when our Palestinian volunteers were here. But right now it's been hard for me to get some of the Palestinians online and be able to post right now. But certainly during the day when they can move around again, we'll have a lot more Arabic language postings. And this is one of the only website that does open publishing that supports Arabic language fonts.
Heather, I'm wondering if you can give us the URL and describe some of the things that are in the site now. If people go online and type in this URL, what will they find on the site?
Sure. The URL, much to many people's consternation, is jerusalem.indymedia.org. And at the top of the page, there's an English or Arabic link. And currently on the site, I've put the update about Adam Shapiro, who's an American citizen, being in the presidential compound. There's an update that I just got from Ramallah, from Huwaida Araf, as well as some other, you know, urgent updates, and the fact that we have international civilians spread out through the Haitian camp. Those are just in the center column, but in the newswire, we have we just got a story that Jose Bové is actually in Ramallah as well. That I haven't been able to confirm, but also an update on the technical problems that we encountered with hacking. and the fact that there are going to be some marches in Greece and solidarity from some places in the United States.
One of the initial targets typically of the Israeli army is to hit the media outlets of the Palestinian Authority. Are you fearful at all that the Palestine IMC itself will be a target?
Definitely, because we happen to be in the same building as Bethlehem TV. And they've hit TV stations in the past, and they do know the AIC is here, and that's our office. They're very aware that we're here. I've been getting instant messages on my phone all night that have said, "We know you're there." You know, those are from crazy people, I'm sure. But so it makes me a little bit nervous. But I've lived here a while now, and that's kind of what you deal with if you're going to try to get the word out as fast as possible.